t'amerò per la vita, la mia vita ti darò. Sembra un sogno rivederti, accarezzarti, le tue mani fra le mani stringere ancora. Il mio mondo, tutto il mondo sei per me, a nessuno voglio bene come a te. Ogni giorno, ogni istante, dolcemente ti dirò, come prima, più di prima, t'amerò.
Buonasera e benvenuti di nuovo a Loro Italiano. Good evening. This is Rosemary Zamaro and welcome to the Italian Hour. Yes, here we are again, Christina and I, to introduce to you a special guest this evening, our beloved Father Michael Favaro. Yes, Father, you are a special guest tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Because we are turning the tables. Our dedicated audience, I'm sure, has seen you on many occasions in doing the interviewing to people of note, profession, and just plain simple folk, and giving us a feel of what we Italians are all about. In reviewing your life in preparation for the segment, Father, you gave our industrious and capable Joan Dargenis, our producer, Christina, and I, some laughs about your stay in Peru. That was 12 years, wasn't it, that you were there?
Yeah.
Yes. But we'll put that on the back burner for a while and speak about it later. Christina, it's your turn to do the interview.
Okay, Rosemary, thank you. Father, buonasera.
Buonasera. E buonasera a tutti.
Okay. Now, I think almost everybody knows now that you were born April 10th, 1927, on Palm Sunday, right?
Right. Okay. On Suffolk Street.
On Suffolk Street.
Right.
Amidst all the color grace.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think what we're going to do is, I think after having recently celebrated your 40th anniversary of your ordination last June, we all got pretty much a good idea of Father Bafaro, the priest, the pastor, the man, so to speak, of the cloth. But tonight we want to see, and we want to introduce you as Father Michael Bafaro, the painter, the farmer, the philanthropist, the culturalist. That's the man we want to portray, the dreamer. That's the man we want to portray tonight. So, where would you like to begin? Would you like to begin as...
You're doing the interviewing.
Okay, well then, okay, it's my lead, very good. Okay, Father, now your seminarian studies brought you to Montreal, Canada, and then you went on to Pordenone, Italy. Why don't you tell us a little bit of why you chose Canada, foreign soil, Canada and Italy, instead of staying either in Massachusetts or in the States?
Well, actually, when I went into the seminary, the place that had been suggested to me was down in Connecticut, in Hartford, Connecticut, mm-hmm. in Bloomfield. And when we got through there, then we went to Montreal. Mm-hmm. Father G was there at the time, was a seminarian, and myself and a few others, and we went to Montreal for philosophy. Mm-hmm. And after 2 years of philosophy, John G. stayed there in Canada, and I went overseas because the bishop wanted us to learn the language. Mm-hmm. And we went to Pordenone. That's in northern Italy between Trieste and Venice.
Okay.
And we were there for, I was there for 4 years. And it was very enjoyable because it gave me an opportunity not only to learn the language and the culture, It was a smaller seminary in the sense that it was a local seminary. It wasn't something in Rome and so forth. And I got to know more of Italy than I did in Massachusetts, because my relatives came from southern Italy in Calabria, Spezzano della Sila. And there, that's just south.
You had to travel a few miles.
So I had to travel the whole length of Italy every time I moved.
Uh-huh.
And so Christmas and Easter and the summer holidays and everything else, I spent in Italy for 4 years and never left Italy. I was there all the time. And it gave me a tremendous opportunity to learn the people, to understand.
The holidays, you had the opportunity to spend with your family,
right,
which you probably would have done here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
So you went from the United States to Montreal, Canada, to Pordenone, Italy, and then you traveled through Italy, came back to the United States, then it was off to Peru.
I was here 10 years, 11 years actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because I went to Our Lady of Lourdes, which was in Milbury at the time. I was there for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Our Lady of Mount Carmel.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed there 9 years. In 1964, in November of 1964, I left and went down to Peru.
And there you spent 12 years.
That's I spent 12 years there.
Shall we get into those little stories he told us?
Right, you told us a few stories, Father, that really left us very much impression. Now, there was a little story about how you went to visit an elderly poor woman who lived in a very poor shack, more or less. Now, I want you to tell our listening audience about that story, because I think that's very...
Which one?
It gives it an insight where you went in, your friends, the
sisters. She invited you to lunch.
And you always hesitated going, but this one time you said you'll offer it up for your
misread
youth.
Yeah. Okay.
The poor people are really poor in the sense that they have very poor facilities to live in. A dirt floor and... four walls, so to say. And this elderly person, she died when she was 89. And
what was her name now? You gave the name and I forgot.
Abuelita?
Abuelita. Well, that means little grandmother.
Oh, little grandmother. Oh.
So we went to see Abuelita, and the sister said, come on, offer it up. So we got on there, and who sat on the crate? Boxes, and we had hot chocolate. She went out and made the hot chocolate and all the rest of it. And while we were drinking the hot chocolate and the cookies that she had, one of the sisters says to me, "Don't look now, but right in back of you, there's a mouse walking on the boxes." You know.
Oh my!
And that was something that we more or less accepted at times, because hey, they were there.
It was part of the local color.
So you did not get overly excited because of that.
But how was your lunch?
Very
he
good.
Offered it up, as he says.
Yeah,
you
right.
Know?
Now there was other stories about they use shells for communication for long distances, Father, in the mountains.
Yeah, that was something that struck me that we would ride horseback up narrow trails up the mountainsides in 4 or 5 or 6 hours. And in the valleys, all of a sudden, as we started to get close to the place where we were going, there would be
strange sound.
Well, it was we knew that it was a horn. And actually, there were seashells.
Mm.
And it was the sound of a seashell. And the people found them, and here the mountains are 14,000 feet high. And they found the seashells up there, and they used them. And as they called the people with them, you would see the people coming down different ends, sides of the mountains, and going up the valleys and so forth, to meet us where we were going. We had to maybe cross a valley or cross onto the other side of the mountain, and they would be there. with this. That's how they got them together.
Communication.
It was a communication.
It was a form of communication.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just in the mountain range?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then what about that story about that he was stuck? Was it in a mountain or in a dirt road? The car broke
with
down?
The Jeep?
And
the yes.
That was a fiasco, I would say, huh?
This goes to show you did a lot more than just say mass.
That's right.
A few years after I was there, on the 8th of December, we went out. It was a feast day, so everything was shut down. And we drove out. We were going to a place. One place hadn't had a priest in 10 years celebrate mass, another one 8 years. And two of us started out in the Jeep that the people from Worcester had given to me. And I remember very clearly, it was maybe 9 o'clock in the morning. We had been traveling about 3 hours now, because we had left early.
To go how many miles?
Oh, we had to travel about 7 or 8 hours before we
hours.
Get there. Yeah, hours. Yeah. Because we were going to sleep there that night and then come
back
the next
back
day.
In the day. So?
So, we traveled the 3 or 4 hours, and all of a sudden I hear this clunkety clunk noise. But just before that, I remember saying to my partner, I said, you know, I said, when we get around this corner, there's a steakhouse down at the corner. We can take and get a steak. Well, there's nothing like that up there in the mountains. Absolutely, there's nothing.
That's what I thought.
So anyway, it was a mirage. We were joking about it. And anyway, all of a sudden, I hear that clankety clanking. I go, oh, God. So I said, well, we got to go a little bit further to see if we can get down at least down the mountain. I drove about 3 more minutes, and boom, the crankshaft went right through and one of the piston rods went right through the motor. So forget it. But anyway, I was there all day, and that was a long stay because there wasn't any traffic on the road because of the holiday. And this one truck, about 4 hours later, came back. It came going back to where we had come from. And my buddy got on the back of the truck because that's how they traveled on there. There'd be 50 people, 25 people, 30 people on the back of a truck. And so he jumped on the back of the truck and would naturally take and come back and get me. But that day it was cloudy and it rained. And then I remember the Ten Commandments. Remember one of the plagues was that there was a fog. And wherever it hit the elk, they would kill them, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And across the valley, I could take and see that fog come over the mountain and come down in the valley and come up and cover me and go up and over.
Oh.
At times, the moonlight would shine. During the day, every once in a while, I would see somebody on the other side of the valley at some distance,
right,
on the other side of the mountain, walking with the radio on his shoulder. And that's the way the Indians walked at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 11 o'clock that night, I had finally made up my mind, because there was no transmitter, that I was going to stay there. And the only food I had all day was a piece of toast and stuff that I had in the morning.
Wow.
And so I had a few hosts and a little bit of wine, so I took those. And then about 11:30, quarter 12 that night, finally I saw lights way off in the distance coming. And when they came, one of my buddies says to me, here, and he handed me a thermos. And I, you know, it was coffee, and I still, thank God, I had something that was frozen.
Yeah, man, it was
and I took out the cup, and they had made Irish coffee for me. So that was good.
That
they took care of everything. But then the next day, we had to take all the wheels off of the Jeep and everything else that night, because we couldn't leave it there, otherwise there wouldn't be anything left. So then we came back quickly the next morning, after traveling late that night, we finally came back to get the Jeep. And that was a treacherous ride down, because there was just a rope pulling the Jeep, and there was no hydraulic brakes or anything else.
I imagine.
And it had rained, so the road was slippery. And I remember telling my buddy, I said, "Dave, if you hear me toot this horn, jump out, because that means that we're going over the..." And it was anywhere from a 1,000 to 2,000 foot drops on the side of the mountain. But anyway, to make the story short, I took and wrote to Kaiser.
At that time, I remember the Kaiser automobile.
They were the ones who were building the Jeeps. And I wrote to him and I told him what had happened, and everybody laughed at me. But about a month later, I got a letter, and it told him, a telegram rather, telling me that their representative would be there in South America, would be in Lima. And he paid my way down, they flew me down, gave me a hotel for the night, and they told me that the motor would be fixed, and they put a new motor in the Jeep and all the rest of the stuff.
At their expense.
That was great.
What are the memories, Father, do you have that really stand out of your years in Peru? Something that maybe Rosemary and I would be interest us and would interest the audience? Something that we haven't heard.
I remember one time, there's a lot of stories, but I just tell you one because it has a significance.
Okay.
I remember one time we were in a protest march. We were marching, all of us, against the United States.
I guess.
The reason why we were doing that was that the United States had captured Peru had captured the shipping vessels, the United States fishing vessels that were off the coast. At that time, Peru was the only country in the world that said, you cannot fish 200 miles
off
our coast because that's our livelihood, there's all fish there and all the rest of the stuff. They use it for fertilizing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there we are walking in this parade, this protesting the United States, against the United States. And we kept on saying, geez, if they ever saw us back home, they'd think we were nuts. But anyway, shortly after that, I came home on a visit and went to a Howard Johnson's up in Fitchburg, mm-hmm. in Lemonster there, for a press conference. And I called attention to the injustice of the
United States.
Japan coming over there and taking all of that fish within a 200 mile limit.
Yeah.
And
how did they get away with it?
The thing was that they captured the boats. So the United States was going to shut off. There was a big fight over the thing. At that time, I said, we have the fishing banks off of the coast of New England that are very wealthy with fish. They're rich with fish. And a day's going to come when they're going to come over here and start taking it here, and then you're going to have a problem.
Right.
Well, all of that press conference, everything else that I said except that, was in the paper. And the interesting thing is that a year later, Kennedy and others put in a bill into the Senate that prohibited fishing 200 miles off the coast of New England. Mm. So the thing was that there was an injustice committed. That's just to show you that, all the times that things go on, that people protest, that there's a reason
there's
for it.
There's a reason for it, and some good comes out of it. Yeah. Really.
Or at least constructive.
That's right.
Now, Rosemary, why don't we bring out the other side of Father, the gentle side, the introspective side, the side, the artistic and creative side.
Well, we're surrounded with it.
That's right. Father, why don't you explain to our audience about all this beautiful artwork around us, these paintings.
One of your hobbies.
Which is one of your hobbies, that's
right. And you have another one where you're going to share with our audience.
A few years ago, somebody came to me and said, why don't we have a painting class in the center, in our parish center? And I said, hey, you want to have a painting class? Go ahead. You can get the teachers and all that. So they found a teacher, and then the night they were going to start, they said, you should get interested. I said, come on. So they said, go ahead. So anyway, I got interested. I stayed there, and the first picture that I did was the lighthouse. As I started the picture of the lighthouse, then I went on to the other pictures. And each one of them has had, you know, meanings to their stories.
Yeah.
And the clown has
talk to us a little bit, Father, about each of the ones we have showing here.
Well, that was the first one. There's a lot of other pictures that
I don't have. Mm-hmm.
But the one that I really, really cherished was the clown. We all remember little Kristen Zamaro, and Kristen had got ill, and one day I had gone to see her, and she was laughing and smiling and all the rest of it, and she said, there was a clown picture on a thing, and I picked up the clown and I said, the card,
yeah.
And I said, hey, Kristen, and she started laughing. So I says, and the thought came to me, can I have the picture? So she gave me the card. It was a postcard. Uh-huh. I said, why don't you let me take it?
Yeah.
So I took the card and went back. When I told the teacher I was going to draw a clown, she said, you're crazy. But we did. And there it is.
Wow.
And of course, we cherished that. We gave it to Kristen and Carmen and Phyllis in their home now. And I want to tell you a little story about that. We had to take it off the wall to bring here. You don't know the fifth, but Michael Pope, you were taking his clown away. It was like taking Troy away.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That was, and we cherish it, as I say, very much.
There's a lot of history with that clown in the sense of Kristen.
Yes.
That when her mother was putting the clown up on the radio, the music, Kristen's famous song played right then and there.
Oh.
And that's happened on several occasions.
Yes.
So that's the story of the clown
and
the other paintings. The only thing that I regret is that I find it very difficult to find the time to do this. I mean, it's.
But don't you find it refreshing when you see the finished product?
Yeah, I know. And it's refreshing when you see it finished.
But while you're doing it, I'm sure many wonderful thoughts come. You see things in perspective. I think this is what happens.
Well, the thing is that it really. I know these last 6 months, I haven't had the time to take into an image. I started one and hopefully one of these days I'll get there to work on it. But anyway.
And once you start, then you continue.
Yeah.
That's fine. And I think John has given us a wonderful display of just but a few of what he's done in his spare time.
But now, Rosemary, now let's refresh their memory. We've talked about the great masters, Raphael, Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci. Those are the great masters of the Renaissance.
And we're going to have more. Yeah, but now we're talking about the great master we have at Our Lady Mount Carmel. This is what promoted me to, or Christina and I, and Joan, to do this. I said, what about Father? You know, he paints and all. And he does the interviewing all the time. It's about time we talk to him. Reverse the roles is right. Now, that other hobby of yours, you go to the farm in the spring and you draw maple syrup, I understand. Have you done that yet?
Yes,
that's an outlet.
We just finished. I try to get up there at least one day a week. It's the day off. It's the day that, according to the season,
Of course.
We just finished the maple sugaring, and that entails quite a bit of work to get it ready in the sense of getting the tubing and the buckets and drilling the holes and setting it up and so forth. And once everything is all ready to go, then you got to wait for the weather to be ideal in the sense of cold nights and with it freezing.
Yeah.
And then as it gets warm during the day, then the sap runs because it's the springtime. You can only do this during the spring, and it's only good for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, depending on the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And
too early now to do it. Have you started?
Oh, it's all done.
It's all finished.
Oh, yeah. We worked this year, we worked in 3 and 4 feet, 5 feet of snow. We had branches that we had trimmed, the trees and everything else. They were 7 or 8 feet high, and they were all covered with snow.
Oh,
so you can imagine what it was to take and tramp through that snow to get all of these trees tapped and to collect the sap. We used a bulldozer and a large sled to bring the sap in, and then it has to be boiled and
reduced.
You need about 40 gallons, actually anywhere, 40 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup.
So about how many gallons of sap would you collect at one time?
Maybe 300 or 400 gallons.
Okay, you owe me half a pint. Can I have half a pint?
No, I'm talking about 300 or 400 gallons of sap.
Of sap. And that will be
well syrup. Well, if you got 400 gallons of sap.
Make only 40 gallons of syrup.
You make 4 gallons.
4 gallons? Oh,
well, if it's
40 gallons.
Good. Well, we heard about
no,
that.
No.
Well, if it's...
You make 10 gallons.
Let's get a piece of paper.
400 gallons of sap. 400 gallons of sap is going to give you 10 gallons.
Okay,
I won't dispute that.
Okay, so Father, now, when did you start becoming the farmer, Mike? When did that start?
Oh, because a friend of ours, the family that lived across the street from my mother, they moved and got some land and a farm and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And one invitation led to another and sparked the interest, more or less.
Mm-hmm. It's good. You chop wood.
Is there farm animals too?
No.
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 Okay, that's swell. Now, let's get back to Our Lady of Mount Carmel Parish.
Mm-hmm.
Father, it's been 10 years since you've been there. You arrived in 1985, 9 years.
Yeah.
And you realized two dreams. One that was begun in 1960, as Christina says, the housing for the elderly.
Right.
Which stands so beautifully beside or adjacent to our parish. And the other is the establishment of the Italian American Cultural Center. Another one of your dreams. And that has grown by leaps and bounds. We've had an opera, we've had movies, we've had
lectures,
wine tasting parties. What else? The number is boundless.
The list goes on.
And, you know, that is open to the public, and we'd like the public to know that they are welcome to come to our center, established by our dear beloved father.
And they're also, Rosemary, they were promotes this television show.
Course.
I mean, it's because of the Italian-American Cultural Center that provides us the opportunity to have this Lodi Italiana.
That's right.
So
that's
all.
But there's something else that you must remember that the Cultural Center is doing. I don't know how many times in the past we tried to have Italian classes and a few people would participate, all the rest of this stuff. But it has happened now that through the efforts of Isabel Marinas and her efforts, that the Cultural Center has been able to foster a number of programs for learners, intermediate groups, young and old, to study Italian and the Italian language. And that theory is ideal.
It's
something
so
that I've wanted in the worst way, because I feel as though if someone feels comfortable in a language, then they're going to want to know something more about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's
so much
truth
to that.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Now, don't you think, Christina, that we've given our audience a good idea of the treasure we have at Our
Lady of Mount Carmel? And you know what we do with treasures, Rosemary.
We hold on to them.
That's right. So therefore, Father, we're going to hold on to you.
Now what did I do?
You didn't do anything.
Well, you're one of the treasures of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, and like Rosemary said,
before you start talking about treasures and everything else, there's one thing that you have to remember.
Yeah.
Okay.
That regardless of what dreams or visions or anything else that I might have had, it has become a reality because of the people who made it happen. I'm not going to mention any names because the list is too long. And I think that not only the ones who have worked, but those who have cooperated and made it happen through their goodwill and other. At times, when I mentioned things, people laughed and said I was crazy and all the rest of this stuff. But as we got deeper into it, they stuck by it. And we were able to take them to, and there's a lot more that has to be done.
That's right. What are your projections?
I really think that if we can, it will help. It will help our people grow.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, Joan Dungenis, our producer, is camera shy, but she's coming right out here to shake hands with Father Bavaro, along with Christina and I.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and Rose, thank him. Oh, you have something else? We forgot. We can't forget that.
We can't forget this. We have a couple of snapshots here that we want Joan to zoom in on of some of the different faces of Father Michael Bavaro.
I think they're too far.
Can you zoom right now?
No, I can't. Okay, put it down a little bit.
Oh, did you want to talk on our show, Joan?
put it up a little bit. Okay, hold on. Okay, move up the next one. Go ahead up the line. Go ahead up a little higher. Okay, then continue up the last one.
These are just some of the different facial expressions of you, Father.
Do we talk about his ordination, the celebration of the ordination 40-year anniversary?
That's right.
These are the pictures that represent that, isn't it?
Right. These pictures were taken last June at his 40th anniversary of his ordination. Father, did you get a glimpse of those? This is some nice expressions we captured. So we had we were lucky and fortunate to be part of some of your 40 years, Father.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to wish you another 40 in good health.
I thank God for the opportunities that I have had in life. I mean, it's hopefully somewhere or another I'm going to make the time to write a book.
Oh, that'll be great.
Because I really think that the experience that I have had with the people that I have met, the people who have responded to challenge out there, there's a whole story of love, a whole story of meeting the difficulties of life. You know, the other night they had the funeral of President Nixon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I didn't get the chance to see any of it, so it was 12:15, 12:30 at night. I switched on the CNN news, and I saw a couple minutes of that. But then they switched to Africa, where the people were voting, and the long lines.
Right.
And
yes.
That there to me, okay, is the picture, really, of 1994. Because anyone that's been involved in that battle of freedom, they might not have that much freedom after they voted, but at least that accomplishment. And to hear that the older folks call attention to the fact that they had spent a lifetime fighting for that opportunity to vote. And up here, here in the United States, we take the voting
for granted.
I think that maybe 2.5% of the voting population really participates. This year is the tragedy of our United States, and it is the reason why our country, one of the reasons why our country is on the downside instead of the upper side,
mm-hmm.
Culturally and socially and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything else that you want to talk about, Father? That whole discourse there was very, very important. I'm sure the audience will realize how great we are to be living in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that you want to say that
public before we close?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think
naturally.
You know, you people laugh, but I remember when there were times in South America when situations were really tense. And oh, mob scenes, and I really mean mob scenes. And somebody would yell,
"Hi,
throw Miguel the microphone."
Oh,
and then give me the microphone.
Oh, I see.
And that would be.
I know what you're
doing. That was the thing that would, I would be able some way or other, through the grace of God, calm the situation, get control of the situation, so that we could take and do what we had to do. But the last message that I would leave probably would be twofold. One is that spiritually, there is no way that we as a people can separate ourselves from God. And I see this constantly out there in the world we're living in today, because of the materialism and the secularization and all the rest of it. And I think that people really have to realize that there is a place of God's Spirit within, and we have to be conscious of that. And in doing that, then there is going to be compassion and understanding and love, and most of all, mutual respect for one another. Mm-hmm. And that's the key. And to tie in with that is that if we want change here in our country or in our parish or our city, it's we, the people, that have to make it. And that's where the problem is. We have become so dependent upon our government, our political leaders, that we're always pointing a finger at them. And we always point the finger at money. If we haven't got good leaders, we say we're lost. If we haven't got the money, we can't do it. And if I went along with that type of theory, nothing would have been done all these years. But anyway, in order to love, you've got to take the risk.
Okay, John.
So thank you. Thank our audience.
Well, I promised the audience Joan, so she must come out and shake your hand.
And wish you well.
And along with Christina and I, for, as we said before, we're only here because of him.
Mm-hmm.
He established the, everybody saw as he says.
Right,
the
Culture Center and therefore the show.
It was his dream. Come on out, Joan. Fix the camera so you can be seen.
Come on, Joan. We're waiting for you. Get your glass, Rosemary, so we can give a toast to Father.
Yes.
There's a glass for you.
Thank you.
Okay, hold on.
Come on out, Joan.
Come on, Joan.
I'll salute the people through the years. Throughout the years of my life,
you put your hand on
I've been here.
What do you want me to do?
Come on.
Thank you
come
very,
on
very
out.
Much,
you
everyone.
Just...
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thank
okay,
you.
Father.
Hello.
To another 40 years, Jinban.
To all of you, thank you.
Hey, Father, thank you.
Jinjin.
To all those who, through the years, have made my life easier, through their help and cooperation and their love, their givingness. Thank you.
Ci vediamo un'altra volta. Ciao. Arrivederci.
Au
revoir.
Arrivederci.
Sayonara. How's that?
Adios.
Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide? I can open your eyes, take you wonder by wonder, over, sideways, and under, on a magic carpet ride, a whole new world, a new fantastic point of view. No one to tell us no, or where to go, or say.
È vero che non ho rimpianti e se potessi tornare indietro, come su una pellicola, correggerei il passato, riguarderei le scene che ho vissuto e tutto quello che non ho capito. Ripeterei le parti che non ho mai imparato. Non è vero che mi sta bene quello che ho fatto fino adesso, andrebbe certo meglio se riavvolgessi il nastro. Andrei a cercare cose che ho perduto, cancellerei le volte che ho mentito, doppierei le frasi che ho sbagliato. E come dentro un film un giorno mi vedrai arrivare, tra luci e riflettori accesi e scene da smontare. Gira il nastro, gira, non lo so fermare, amore che per sbaglio non t'ho saputo amare. E corre il nastro, corre, senza aspettare, adesso che t'ho perduto. Non è vero che non ho mai pianto, che non ho perso né sbagliato, o sbaglierei di nuovo. Se ritornassi indietro, magari faccio in tempo a riparare, senza trucchi e senza rigirare, le scene che non ho saputo recitare. Gira il nastro, gira, non lo so fermare, amore che per sbaglio non t'ho saputo amare. E corre il nastro, corre, senza aspettare, adesso che t'ho perduto. Non è vero che non ho mai pianto, che non ho perso né sbagliato, ma sbaglierei di nuovo se ritornassi indietro. Magari faccio in tempo a riparare, senza trucchi e senza rigirare, le scene che non ho saputo recitare. Come dentro un film, un giorno ti verrò a cercare, tra luci e riflettori accesi per farmi perdonare. Gira il nastro, gira, e non lo so fermare, amore che per sbaglio non t'ho saputo amare. E corre il nastro, corre, senza aspettare, adesso che t'ho. E gira il nastro, gira, e non lo so fermare, amore che per sbaglio non t'ho saputo amare. E corre il nastro, corre, senza aspettare, adesso che t'ho perduto. E come dentro un film, un giorno mi vedrai arrivare, tra luci e riflettori accesi e scene da smontare. Gira il nastro, gira, non lo so fermare, amore per sbaglio non t'ho saputo amare. E corre il nastro, corre, un film, un giorno ti verrò a cercare, tra luci e riflettori accesi per farmi perdonare. Gira il nastro, gira, e non lo so fermare, amore che per sbaglio non t'ho saputo amare. E corre il nastro, corre, senza aspettare, adesso che t'ho perduto. E tra luci e riflettori accesi per farmi perdonare. Gira il nastro, gira, non lo so fermare, amore che per sbaglio non t'ho saputo amare. E corre il nastro, corre, senza aspettare, adesso che t'ho perduto.